The following business conversation is brought to you by Trudon, the publisher of the Yellow Pages and proud supporter of small business in South Africa.
Hello.
Hi, Dave from A1 Builders in Pretoria.
Yeah.
It's Dan. I found your number on the internet and I need you to build me a room, the purpose of which I cannot disclose.
What?
Fine. It's a sunroom. Can you start immediately?
It's 4 a.m.
I'm sure it's 4 a.m. somewhere, Dave, but here in SA, it's 10.
You mean USA?
There's more than one Pretoria out there. For the quickest and most efficient way to find what you're looking for, start your search with yellowpages.co.za or download the app. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.
I'm Adrian Groenewald, Leadership Platform, and of our two-hour leadership show, this is the Small Medium Business Leadership Conversation. We just had a fantastic, energetic half hour with a principal of a primary school in Benoni, Actonville. And it's just wonderful to see the leadership, the difference that a principal made there. And you have your small business where you're trying to follow your dream and make a difference. On the 11th of April at the Midrand Conference Center, there's a conference, Opportunities in Africa and How Entrepreneurs Can Seize Them. Speakers include lots of serial entrepreneurs. If you want to attend there, just follow #AfricaRise, and then you can maybe join them, be inspired as a small medium business owner. Last week we spoke of employment law and the small medium business. And you can go to our podcast page and download that specific podcast. Just a half hour. No doubt it'll make a difference for you. Today we speak about how to deal with your bank, both as a transactor and borrower. And in the studio, assisting us with that, Zach Sivalingam. Hi, Zach.
Perfect.
Welcome.
Thank you, Adrian.
Say your surname for me.
Sivalingam.
Sivalingam.
Perfect.
I like Zach. That's easier. Great to have you in the studio. He's head of global business development for FNB Business. He's a seasoned banker with over 18 years experience across the retail, business, and commercial segments. So he's going to talk to you about how to engage the bank on simple and complex issues. And also, as usual, Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team. Hi, Richard.
How's it going, Adrian?
Richard will pretty much be leading the conversation as a former banker himself and now running his own business. But first, we go to the line, Brian Maudsley from Cape Town. He's a small businessman himself, started from nothing. He's very well known in social media circles, and he often talks and attempts to inspire small business owners. So, Brian, welcome from Cape Town. Brian? Is Brian on the line? Brian Maudsley? We're going to go back to him. Okay, we're going to have to go back to him. When he's on the line, then when he's back with us, we'll try and put him back on the line so that he can share his inspirational thought with us. All right, Richard Angus and Zach, we want to talk about how you engage your bank. Now, there's quite a few things, again, we can talk for ages just on that. But I sent you an email, Richard, just about some simple things. If I'm a small business owner, there are some things that I need to get right, but I struggle with. For example, how do I motivate an overdraft facility?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, small business, I need an overdraft facility. Or I would like a business credit card to take people out on lunch and that sort of thing. But we know banks don't just hand that to you.
No.
So what must I do to qualify for that sort of thing, Zach?
Well, Adrian, maybe we want to let's go back a number of steps and kind of go, you know, how do we start this process?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to take Brian Maudsley quick. He's back on the line. Let's see if it's working and then we'll come back. Sorry, Richard. Brian, welcome.
Hi, Adrian. Good to hear you.
Yes. Great to have you. Go for it. Share with us an inspirational thought for our small business owners.
Okay. What I want to introduce today is actually two principles that hopefully will motivate and inspire. The first principle is, and they're both around getting past procrastination, which is definitely one of the big ones.
Okay.
Mantra. If you can come up with a mantra, something like, I will take bold action towards achieving my dreams today. Mm-hmm. If you can take that and repeat it on a daily basis, eventually it will become part of your being and should get you to get up off the couch and do what it is you need to do. The second principle, and this is something that is a personal favorite of mine, is the phrase, what's next? Anytime you have a number of tasks to do, as soon as you have completed one, You say that to yourself. What's next? You then get to the next task. If you're working with other people, it's a very useful tool to indicate you have completed the task and you are ready for the next task.
Hmm.
By the time you get to the end of the task, you say what's next, you get the next task until there are no more tasks left to do, and then you can relax. I personally like this one because when I am ever helping my wife clean the house, which is not a task I enjoy, I keep saying what's next, until she actually has nothing left for me to do, and then I can go and work.
You're lucky. Okay, all right, so the mantra and the what's next principle. Just give us that mantra again, your suggestion of one.
The mantra is, I will take bold action towards my dreams today. And the emphasis is on the today rather than I will take bold action towards my dreams, which is a little bit airy-fairy. By putting it on today, you are almost securing it on this moment.
Okay. All right, so the mantra, I will take bold action towards my dream today. And then that, while you go through your list of things to do, actually out loud, say to yourself, what's next? What's next? It's almost like you're taking on the future. You're saying, right, what's next? Let's go for the next thing. I like that. Thank you. Practical, inspirational thoughts for our small business owners. In fact, for any leader listening, it doesn't matter where you are, principal or whoever. Thank you, Brian, for sharing that with us. Appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. What's next, guys?
Okay, so let's take bold action today. First bold action. Let's talk to our banker. So, yeah, you ask the question, so where does this all start? You know, we've talked before about, on the show about, setting up your business, and there's a certain legal process that you need to do if you're, for example, picking the right legal structure. We've talked about that in previous shows. And so, you've now got yourself to the point where you're saying, okay, I've got a structure that I'm going to commence with. And the very first thing that comes to anybody's space is, okay, I now need a bank account of some sort.
Uh-huh.
You perhaps, go onto that lovely answer a tool called Google, and you go, okay, I'm going to need a bank. And it's at that point that most people start interacting with the bank. The days of actually walking in to a bank branch and walking into, any of the mainstream banks is actually probably far gone.
It's almost sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
You used to have your business and your banker.
I think those days are pretty much behind us.
Mm.
Most people want to do at least their preliminary research on their banking partner online. And all of the banks, in fact, globally, all banks realize that. And so have prepared a lovely selection of information that they serve up via their various internet channels, etc. So, yeah, maybe if I can put this to Zach. I mean, I guess the first point of departure is you're going to have a look online and you're going to say, well, I've either already got my business, or I'm in the process of registering the business. What can I expect from my bank or my potential bankers at this point? Because at this point, I haven't selected my bank yet. I'm still thinking about it. What should I be seeing out there as a person from the banking industry looking at your customer the other way? What do you try and serve up on this platter of www.whatever?
Thanks, Richard. I think the important thing for us is to empower the entrepreneur. So it's important that when the entrepreneur is making his choice of the preferred financial institution, he's getting a full suite of tools that manages his business autonomously and independently. And I think the point here that's very important is digitization and technology should not take away from the customer relationship management model that we thrive on as banks and that we should be focusing our energy on. So I think the entrepreneur must look at the online banking platform, critical operational efficiencies brought about by tools like instant alerts, messaging, online recons, managing his cash flow through accounting solutions provided as value adds by the bank.
Okay. So, yeah, it sounds like you've got to pick your partner quite carefully by looking at what they're offering, and you should be able to ascertain a lot of that from the online sites. I guess the starting point is, as you're registering your business. I mean, I noticed on the FNB site recently they introduced a new capability to actually be able to interact with the company registrar online as well. So, I mean, that, even some of the banks are going further back in the value chain in terms of before you've even formed the business, they're offering you that capability to plug into the capability.
Trying to hook you there already.
Yeah.
So, Richard, I think valid point. The entrepreneur already faces a whole lot of challenges considering the macros at the moment. So we want to take away some of those operational nuances. So one of those innovations is our partnership with SIPSI, the company's Intellectual Property Commission, and we facilitate for the entrepreneur registering his new co when he applies for a FNB business account. There's a cost of 125 Rand, and that's levied by SIPSI, and FNB handles that at a zero handling fee. So that's just a small example of how we're trying to create some sort of efficiency for the entrepreneur and take away that administration hassle of doing business efficiently.
Okay, so I'm picking up on a key word there, because we have spoken about this before, about the efficiencies of a small business, because the reality, you want to be out there engaging with your customer base, providing the services and solutions that you need to. The last thing you want to be doing is spending hours in a banking hall, or online, or fighting your way through to Pretoria to register things. So I think that's an important consideration to keep in mind is when you're selecting that bank and when you're looking at the services you want, you want to make sure that everything happens in an easy to do business with type of mentality.
Especially as a small business.
Yeah. So pick your partner and your bank very carefully, making sure that they're talking to your specific needs and your style of doing things. So if you're somebody that wants an online experience, but your bank seems to be quite clunky on the online space, or the banks you're looking at seem quite clunky in the online space, perhaps you need to be looking a little further, because they're not possibly going to be a good fit. You want to make sure that when you do have that relationship and you start building a relationship with the bank, that it's at a branch, and if you're going to build it at a branch level, whichever physical space you're going to build it, that person is there and they're available to you. That, it's not like you're going to be driving miles to go and see the person from the bank, or them driving miles to see you. Quid pro quo. So you've started off. Now you're saying, okay, let's engage. I guess the first thing that everybody needs is they need a transactional account. And potentially with that, they want to, engage with the bank. They're going to engage via various transaction mechanisms. The day of the check is long gone. Sorry to destroy that thought for the business owners. I mean, I recently got some information from a very small entity. And they turned around and they said, oh, sorry, we don't take checks anymore. And I thought to myself, even down at the guy who you need to pay with a small business transaction, they're not interested anymore. Nobody seems to be interested anymore in the world of the check. So what's driving this transactional world nowadays, Zach? What do you have to consider? What do you have to think about?
You have to think about a cashless society, Richard, basically. So just a step back in terms of what do you want to provide the entrepreneur with? I think people or entrepreneurs need to be set up properly so that they can transact via a banking application and via digital channels. The next step is we want to take cash out of the system because there's a high security risk, and using online banking, EFTs, e-wallets, and all those type of new e-type services that banks offer will create efficiencies and avoid unnecessary costs for the entrepreneur. So everything should be digital, and there must be a real valid reason for an entrepreneur in this day and age to be walking into a branch. And there's times that happens, and we've got an omni-channel experience for that type of interaction. But we want to focus on the entrepreneur's business requirements and solve his business problems. And the digital age takes away the hassles of operational nuances if he's properly set up on a digital platform via his mobile, via an iPad, via one of those type devices for electronic banking.
Okay, so you want to be settling and making payments electronically using EFTs, electronic funds transfer, and you want to make sure that you're receiving payment in exactly the same way. It is quite important, and I'll never forget we had an advert many years ago when I was working at FNB Corporate. We did a study about what happens when you move cash around the system. And we did a bit of a play on this. We had a 100 Rand note, And in the advert, this note was changing hands all the time through a retail and then into a banking space, etc. And every time the cash moved, the value on the notes changed from 100 rand, and it started decreasing every time the cash moved from one person in the ad to the next.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, most people didn't understand that subtlety, but the reality is every time cash moves inside a business or between a business and a counterparty, its value actually does decrease because of the cost of counting the cash and the controls over the cash. I mean, think about it, Adrian. Mm. If I was to hand you a wad of notes, what's the first thing you're going to do?
Hmm.
You're going to count it.
Yeah.
That takes time. That takes energy.
Yeah.
And every time cash moves in around this room, I mean, if we passed it around the studio, time goes into it. And every single person that we pass the cash to, the first thing we do as human beings is we count it.
Mm.
That's the reality. Mm. And that counting and that securing the cash costs money. So you want to avoid that in your business at all costs. You want to make sure that people transact with you electronically, get rid of that cash, the cost of cash out of the system. Then, Zach, I mean, the other things that kind of come to me is I'm going, okay, we've talked about cash flow management before, and we've talked about the little problem of you've got cash arriving and cash leaving, but sometimes the cash has to leave before the cash arrives. You know, so this, in my mind, I go, okay, there's this lovely little thing called an overdraft. Now, that generally brings on the quivers in most people in their personal capacity, never mind a businessman when he says, I'm going to need an overdraft. Talk to us a little about how we dress ourselves for that overdraft conversation.
Perfect. So, Richard, I think I want
to dress yourself perfectly.
Perfectly. I think, firstly, you need to understand the different stages of the cycle in a business, and I think if I may take the entrepreneur through a little journey. So the entrepreneur starts up his business. There's generally startup funding, owner's contribution, and that forms your equity in the business. And the first thing, and as Adrian mentioned, he needs sort of a little overdraft facility for operational expenses. And once you've got a track record with the bank, and that could be between 6 and 12 months, you're in good credit standing, you can generally qualify for a smaller overdraft facility on a scoring based on your credit standing. But once your business grows and we've gone into the 12 to 24 month period, as way of example, you would then secure contracts with debtors, and you'd build a debtors book. And at that stage, we would get into the working capital conversation. So the very simple thing for an entrepreneur, and working capital is generally referred to as the lifeblood of a business, is the terms that he affords to his debtors and the terms that his suppliers afford him. So I'll give you a quick example. So if an entrepreneur pays his suppliers in 30 days, but he collects his debtors or his receivables in 60 days, he has a 30-day working capital requirement or a 30-day shortfall.
Shortfall.
Hmm. This usually is funded via an overdraft facility. So the bank would assess the client's debtors book, and generally on a conventional overdraft facility, you'd qualify for 50-55% of your debtors book up to 60 days of the aging. And generally it is matched by your equity in the business. And the next stage for the businesses going...
Zach, I just want to clarify that. So when you say it's matched by the equity of the business, so if I've got 2 million rands worth of debtors in my 60-day scenario, you're saying the bank would be willing to potentially lend me up to 1 million rand of that?
Correct.
But I would have need to have put in 1 million rand of my own funding at the same time, if I understood that correctly.
100%. Okay. 100%.
Just to clarify that example.
So the next stage of that would be a more accelerated form of working capital, which we'd refer to as debtor finance or invoice discounting. And this is where the entrepreneur is now securing high growth contracts that requires him to grow at a more advanced rate, and he's now looking for an accelerated form of funding. And all this does is it takes your conventional overdraft and puts it on steroids, basically. So what it does, it now gives you, so for that 1 million equity, we would then be comfortable to lend you up to 3 to 5 times that in terms of an invoice discounting facility. And a conventional, so just a quick comparison, a normal overdraft would be 50% of your book up to 60 days. An invoice discounting facility would be up to 120 days from invoice date, right up to 70-80% of okay. your debtors book. So you see unlocking much more
so
cash
that's,
flow.
That's yeah. unlocking the cash flow in the business. And it's really important, Adrian, you've talked before about scenarios where people are securing contracts with good clients. I mean, remember, obviously in the debtor finance space, you want to know that you've got quality debtors sitting there. You don't want the mom and pop shop sitting behind there. You want those good quality names in your debtors book. Which many businesses have, and the flip side of that, and we've spoken about this, about large corporates and how well they or don't how well they pay or don't pay. The reality is that often those blue chip entities, they've got their processes, and it takes 45 days to get an invoice through the system, and then they're going to pay, and you know 60 days later you're still waiting for your money from the blue chip client. So yeah, data finance definitely works in those sort of scenarios for a smaller entity.
Well explained, Zach. I mean, I understand it. If I do, then
thank you.
Then I think most small business owners out there would understand.
Okay. And Aaron, I think for me, from what I've observed in small businesses, understanding data finance and how you can use that debtors book is probably one of the biggest things that people don't understand.
How expensive is it?
A debtor finance facility is generally more expensive than a conventional overdraft facility, purely, Adrian, because there's an audit on the debtor's book on a monthly basis, and there's some administration that the bank does on behalf of the client in terms of uploading invoices and stuff like that. But it's a non-disclosed facility.
Yeah.
So generally, there's a fee, as opposed to the overdraft where you pay on utilization. There's a monthly admin fee for administering the debtor's book, but non-disclosed.
Okay. Okay.
Richard, if I may, we've spoke about a lot about equity, and I know if we want to talk about the smaller medium enterprises, there's another facility called selective invoice financing. Mm-hmm. That's where you may not. This is a startup or a business that secured a blue chip type of contract. They're now getting their invoice in, and we, without necessarily the equity, we would discount up to 80%, and that would be a disclosed facility. So we would then afford that entrepreneur the opportunity to unlock 80% of that invoice, and that would be on a disclosed basis. So it will be a confirmation of session of that invoice by the blue chip debtor to the bank.
So basically you sell your invoice
100%
to the bank. You take 80% of the cash, for example, and the debtor who now has to pay you, they know that invoice has actually been sold to X or Y
bank. And it's coming in.
And when they make the payment, they obviously know that effectively you've already been paid for the invoice, and they are settling the amount with the bank. And a disclosed facility like that is really key for those really large contracts. There's also a certain level of comfort for a large supplier or a large customer if they know that you're taking reasonable steps to secure your cash flows against, you know, their order, and they know that, hey, when they pay in 60 days or whenever it is, they're actually paying the bank, and you've made sure you've got your cash up front and you've secured those facilities from that perspective.
And Richard, it forms part of a higher level supply chain solution as well as enterprise development, where these blue chips are empowering the SMEs.
Okay. So this is one of the products that you could use, linking back to last week's conversation with Heather, where from a supply chain perspective, yeah, you could secure that big contract, but you've got a way to actually finance and fund it going forward. Okay, so Zach, let's just move from working, from that perspective of working capital finance. You know, we often, and I've heard and know of the need to actually put equity into the business, and there's a business transaction that's happening, I'm buying or selling a business. We talk about the concept of leveraged finance, and people will say, what is this thing called leveraged finance? Talk to us for a moment about leveraged finance and what that means to a businessman.
So leveraged finance, generally in banking terms, and just to keep it as simple as possible, generally happens, it's a trigger. It's brought about by a trigger event. Either there's a management buyout, or there's a management buy-in, so there's management looking to take an equity stake from existing shareholders, or there's an exit strategy. There's shareholders looking to exit the business, and they're looking to create a funding mechanism to substitute that shareholder exiting. So a leveraged finance loan basically would be a medium-term loan. Generally, it's around 5 years, 60 months. And the businesses that are looking to expand or looking for growth opportunities by injecting capital into the businesses will also look at a leveraged finance type opportunity. And this basically, we assess this requirement. You're looking for a company with consistent cash flows, a company that at least has about 3 years worth of consistent EBITDA levels, and that we could relying on these historic and projected cash flows to repay the lump sum being senior debt. And you know, we can talk about the structures of a leveraged finance, residual amounts and moratoriums on interest, but that would all depend on the entrepreneur's appetite for a more aggressive type leverage facility.
So effectively, for those out there listening, you're using the cash flows of the business to repay the loan to the bank, and often used to pay out, you know, shareholders that may have exited, and to fund the business for growth going forward. Can be used in either of those sort of scenarios.
100% cash flow assessment is critical.
Okay,
cool. So really, lots of possibilities.
Definitely.
I don't know. In all simplicity, I would think that for most small businesses, you would want to stay away from not all, but most of those services. That would mean your business is healthy. That would mean things are intact, cash flow coming in well, clients paying well, with one or two or three of those, maybe just to strengthen the weaknesses in the system.
Yeah, I think there's always a fallacy that, you know, you only need to go to the bank when you need help.
Yeah.
The reality is that...
That's changed. Eh?
That fundamentally needs to shift, because the reality is, if you're only operating on the cash that you have inside your business and you're not using your working capital cycle effectively, you're actually constraining the growth in your business. Mm. And if you want to grow as a business, the reality is you need cash to do that. And if you're not using your banker as a partner as opposed to a lender of last resort, and I think, you know, over time people have seen bankers as their lender of last resort when things are really tough and I don't have cash, okay, I'll go on bended knee and beg at the bank. If you've built your relationship with your banker up front and you know what your business plan looks like, you know what your cash flow cycle looks like, and you're making sure you're using your banker at your strategic points. So I'm going to use the 60-day debtor book, bring it back in immediately, use that cash flow through, you can actually get your business to move quite effectively.
Okay. All right.
The last thing I want to just touch on that is out there from a business perspective that often causes issues is people often say, well, I need capabilities like the ability for people to pay me on a credit card, etc. You know, those facilities are actually out there for the small business and are actually more accessible than what we may think. You know, we seem to think that, you know, merchant acquiring services, yeah, as they're called, or point of sale terminals, are only for those very big businesses, you know, that sit there that you go and shop at on a Saturday morning. They're there for the small business, and that's how you make your business cashless.
Okay.
So businesses need to think about that as well.
Thank you, Richard. That's Richard Angus, the finance team. And Zach, really good to have you with us.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Head of Global Business Development for FNB Business. You certainly made things much clearer for me. And I think much clearer for a lot of small, medium business owners out there, especially the small business owner. A reminder, create a mantra for yourself. What was the mantra that Brian Worsley said? He said, today I will... Go listen to the beginning of the podcast. Brilliant mantra. Create a daily mantra that says, today I will action, in essence, to follow my dream. And then he also said, use the principle of what next. You do your action and you say, what's next? What's next? All the time. But go and listen to that in the beginning of the show. Next up, we're going to have a fantastic lady in the studio, Feral Hafaji, the chief editor of City Press, one of the powerful women in the country. She doesn't think so, but independent individuals have named her as such. But we're going to talk leadership with her. You really can't afford not to listen to that. We're going to have a master lesson first, half hour, and the second half hour, zoom in on Feral Hafaji. This conversation that we just had was brought to you by Trudon. Visit trudonhome.co.za for all your small business marketing needs. Trudon, it's our business to grow your business.
Ivan Cleaners, Worcester. Conrad speaking.
Hi, Conrad. This is Chad from the Glen Gables Hotel in Worcester. We're looking for a new cleaning service. I found your number on the internet. Would you be interested?
Yeah, Flip, great. Where are your offices?
We're on the corner of Alaho and Aldo, across from the Beef Cack and Tag Shack.
Cack and what?
There's more than one Worcester out there. Reach a more relevant audience by advertising with the Yellow Pages. Visit yellowpages.co.za and get listed online with South Africa's most trusted business directory. Yellow Pages, for local, reliable results.